Dr. William Luther Pierce, the year 2000. I need your support.
Hello. How are we doing? How do we judge how we're doing? Most people, I believe, judge themselves by the reactions of those around them. Certainly, that's true of lemmings who have no inner standards for judgment at all. They evaluate their own qualities, their own behavior, their own accomplishments entirely on the basis of the reactions of those around them. They are entirely social animals, herd animals. But really, all of us, not just the lemmings, do that to a greater or lesser degree. When the major Jewish organizations declared my organization, the National Alliance, to be the most dangerous organization in America, my response was, hey, wonderful, we must be doing something right. Every time I see a shrill newspaper headline reference to me or read an editorial with some editor shrieking that I am a hater, I know that I have earned the hatred of an enemy of my people. And I cannot help but feel a little twinge of pride because of it. Of course, we have to be careful about that sort of thing. When a bunch of Jewish organizational leaders and media bosses declare that I am dangerous, I never know whether they really feel threatened by the ideas and the truths that I bring out in these broadcasts, or whether they've just sent out a fund appeal and are trying to frighten the little Jews into sending them money by holding me up as a boogeyman. Perhaps it's a little of both. It's a similar situation with governments. The media, the liberals, and the politicians in Germany are trying now to outlaw any groups there which are opposed to multiculturalism, to more non-German immigration, and to the re-Judaizing of Germany. Is this effort, which is orchestrated by the media, simply an attempt to sell more newspapers by raising sensational issues? Or is it based on a real fear that German patriotic groups are gaining strength and may derail liberal and Jewish plans to multiculturalize Germany? I'm inclined to believe that there is a certain amount of fear behind these efforts, both in America and in Europe, efforts to muzzle heterosexual white males in general and patriots in particular. The people who are the primary beneficiaries of current government policies, feminists, homosexuals, non-whites of all varieties, especially Jews, don't want anyone to upset their apple cart. They want to hang on to the unnatural policies and quotas being enforced by the government for their benefit. Feminists really would like to be able to lock up any man who laughs at their silly notions of equality. These are basically very intolerant and narrow-minded people. They don't believe in free speech except for those who agree with them. I used to get letters from them which started off, quote, "Unfortunately, the First Amendment allows people like you to spout your hateful, sexist, and racist, and homophobic ideas, etc." These days, I get letters from the same sort of people who now tell me, quote, "You should be locked up. The First Amendment was never intended to protect speech like yours, which hurts people's feelings." Anyway, the more shrill letters I receive from haters, the more I'm inclined to believe that I'm making progress. But it's much better to judge ourselves by an internal standard than by the way in which our enemies react to us. We set our own goals, and we judge ourselves on the basis of the progress we make toward those goals. In my own case, I know that I feel much better when I see credible evidence that I'm reaching more normal, healthy people with my message every week, and that I'm having more of an effect on the people who listen to me. I feel better about this than I do when some bunch of Jewish snake oil salesmen like the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith declares me the most dangerous man in America. That's flattering, perhaps, but not really a standard to judge myself by. Here's what I judge myself by. I received a letter from a listener a few days ago. He told me that he buys audio cassettes of all of my broadcasts, and he plays them in his car. He plays them loudly with the windows down so that other people can hear them too, or at least can hear parts of them when he's stopped at traffic lights. That's the way he does his bit. But he was astounded, he told me, when one day recently he reached over to turn on the cassette player in his car and realized he already was hearing one of my broadcasts. It was coming from another car. That's what I call progress. I told you last week about a book that a professor at the University of Vermont, Dr. Robert Griffin, has written about me. None of the big New York publishers would touch it. They told him it wouldn't sell. So he published it as an e-book at mightywords.com, which is a division of Barnes & Noble, the world's biggest bookseller. And Dr. Griffin's book immediately moved to the top of the bestseller list, the number one bestseller among all of the thousands of e-books sold by mightywords.com. And that's where his book still is, the top of the bestseller list. That's progress, because just 5 years ago, something like that couldn't have happened. The Jewish control of the publishing industry was too tight. I get letters every day from people who are really angry about the Middle East situation, not just about what is happening in Palestine, but about the absolutely disgusting way the media and the government over here are responding to that situation. When the Jews shoot another Palestinian child, the media here portray it as, oops, sorry, another Arab was killed in the crossfire between Palestinian terrorists and Israeli defense forces. But more and more, Americans over here are realizing that it's not a matter of crossfire at all. It's a matter of trained Jewish marksmen sitting safely behind barricades and carefully picking off unarmed Palestinian children with sniper rifles fitted with bipods and telescopic sights. It's cold-blooded murder. It's the Jewish method of crowd control. More and more Americans are becoming angry about the way the news is slanted and distorted to favor the Jews, to portray the Jews always as the innocent victims, and about the way every political candidate in America is licking the hands or some other part of the chief murderers and aggressors and liars in the Middle East. When I see evidence of this anger, I feel good. When people write to me and tell me that they agree with me, that it is these same murderers that our politicians so slavishly serve who ultimately are responsible for the murderous attack on the USS Cole, regardless of who actually delivered the bomb, I feel good. When I see more and more people understanding that it is not Osama bin Laden who is responsible for Americans being unsafe in the Middle East, but that it is the people in Washington who support Israel, who support the murderers, who support the aggressors, I feel good. And if I can see evidence that I have contributed in any way to this growing understanding, I feel really good. And you know, you can feel good too. You can help spread understanding, and you can see the results of your help. You don't have to spend thousands of dollars every month to have your own radio program in order to do this. You can help me do it. My organization, the National Alliance, has members all over the world who help support these American Distant Voices broadcasts and the Alliance's other outreach programs. I invite you to join us. You'll find information and an application form at our website. If you don't have internet access, just write to me, and I'll mail you the application and information. And if you'd like to help, but just aren't a joiner, or if you're just not ready to join yet, you still can be a supporter. Just make a pledge to send me $10 each month. If you're worried about Janet Reno's secret police, you can send a postal money order, which is untraceable, or even cash. And of course, you can send more than $10 anytime you want. But if you will pledge to send at least $10 each month to support what we're doing in the National Alliance, I'll send you our activities newsletter, our monthly membership bulletin. That's exactly the same bulletin which is mailed out to all of our members around the world each month. I'll send it to you by first-class mail every month. You won't be a member. You won't have a membership card or a membership record, but you'll receive the same bulletin that all of our members receive, and you'll be able to see the results of our activities, activities which you will be helping to support. Please be assured, I really do need your support. One of the most interesting sections of our monthly bulletin is a sampling of both the positive and the negative responses we receive from the public as a result of our activities. In each bulletin, I actually quote from a number of letters that I have received during the month so that our members can see what the public is thinking. Even our hate mail is instructive because it helps us to understand how the haters think, if one can call it that. We can see very specifically just how the brainwashing of the media and the schools, and in many cases of the churches, is reflected in the statements of those who have been brainwashed. We can see certain statements mindlessly parroted over and over in various hate letters, and we can draw some conclusions from this, not only about the propaganda to which they've been subjected, but also about how their minds work. Anyway, what we're doing is interesting, and it's very important. It's necessary. You can be a part of it. Just write me. Let me know that you'll be sending at least $10 each month, and I'll arrange for you to receive our membership bulletin by first-class mail every month. Speaking of my hate mail, I'm reminded of a subject I spoke about briefly with you a few weeks ago, a subject about which you'll certainly be hearing much more in the coming months. That's the subject of reparations to American blacks for slavery. It's a subject which is beginning to pick up a bit of steam and will continue to do so. I recently read an essay by a black woman who is concerned that as these reparations claims by blacks become louder and more insistent, they will enrage white nationalists. I don't know whom she had in mind when she referred to enraged white nationalists, but I'm a white nationalist, and I'm certainly not enraged. In fact, I'm quite pleased by the prospect of black reparations claims. Louder and more insistent, the better. The more money demanded, the better. At this time, the reparations movement is being pushed mostly by blacks, whose thinking seems to be that if the Jews can get away with it, so can they. I'm sure that it won't be long, however, before a gaggle of Jewish lawyers has shanghaied the black reparations racket, and we'll see black lawyers fighting with Jewish lawyers over who gets the biggest piece out of Whitey's hide. So, what does this have to do with my hate mail? Well, a fair amount of it comes from white wimps, from a whiny, feminized sort of white man who typically responds to my complaints about the out-of-control immigration situation by reminding me that the Indians were here first, that white people are immigrants, and that if anybody should be kicked out of the country, it is whites. We stole the land from the Indians, these white wimps whine. It doesn't really belong to us, so we have no right to keep anyone else out. If I comment on the breakdown of law and order in Rhodesia and South Africa after those formerly civilized countries built by white people were turned over to black rule, I hear a very similar sort of whining from the same white wimps. When I talk about the seizure of white farms in Rhodesia and the murder of white farmers and the rape of white women in South Africa, the wimps whine that turnabout is fair play. Whites used to mistreat the blacks in Southern Africa, they say, and so now I have no right to complain that blacks are mistreating whites. These are the wimps who cheered Bill Clinton when he boasted to college audiences during the past 8 years that the white majority in America was on its way out, that within the next few decades, the white majority would be shoved aside by people of color and by feminists and by homosexuals and by others who hadn't been given a chance to run things yet. And the wimps cheered. White wimps. This sort of insanity didn't begin with the Clinton presidency. It was preached on college and university campuses all over America back in the 1960s. The message was that the rule of the world by heterosexual white males is not fair. White people, straight people, have had their turn. Now it's time for the non-whites and the gays and lesbians and others to take their turn. And then really, things will be much better for everyone, even for the uptight heterosexual white males who had ruled the world brutally by force. The new way, it was asserted, would be women and blacks and gays running things by committee. There would be no coercion. Everything would be worked out by talking. Everything would be shared. Everything would be fair. You know, I'm not making this up. I was teaching on a university campus myself in the 1960s. The Jews were sowing their seeds, winning converts among the soft, feminized youth of the middle class even then. I've talked about this revolution in values and attitudes among young people during the 1960s in past broadcasts, and I'll undoubtedly talk about it again in future broadcasts. But for now, I'll just recommend that if you're not old enough to remember the revolution of the 1960s yourself, you can read a book about it that was written by one of the principal Jewish spokesmen for the revolution, Jerry Rubin. Rubin's book, Do It, was published in 1970 by the big New York Jewish publisher Simon & Schuster, and it's available in every major library in the country today. Many other books also were written during the 1960s and 1970s promoting the same ideas and attitudes, but Jerry Rubin's Do It is the one I recommend just because it's so accessible. It's written for young people, people with a short attention span. It's simple and straightforward and clear. There's no ambiguity about what this Jew is advocating. It may be embarrassing to some of Rubin's more sophisticated fellow travelers who prefer sociological double talk to Rubin's often obscene bluntness, but really, they're all promoting the same ideas, the same sort of world. The young white people who absorbed Rubin's poisonous message in the 1960s are university administrators and high school principals, and government bureaucrats and newspaper editors and Christian preachers today, using different words perhaps, but spreading the same poisonous doctrine to a new and larger generation of young white people, to the preteens in their baggy shorts and backward baseball caps, to the teenagers with the safety pins to their noses listening to their CDs by black rap stars, and to the wimpy, semi-literate, pseudo-sophisticated university students in their multi-culti dormitories who write their whining hate letters to me. You know, I'm not enough of a psychologist to really understand this phenomenon, to understand why there are so many more whining white wimps who are susceptible to this Jewish poison than there used to be, why there are so many more pathetic, feminized young white men who believe that we ought to give America back to the Indians and let the blacks do unto us as we are alleged to have done unto them than there were a century ago. I suspect that it has something to do with the way young people are socialized these days, spending their early years in the chaotic democratic environment of daycare centers instead of at home. I wish I had a psychologist here on my staff to help me understand these things better. But there are some things I do understand well enough. I understand that if white men 200 or 300 years ago had been like these feminized wimps who populate our college campuses today, we wouldn't have to debate about giving America back to the Indians. The Indians would still have it. We never would have won the West. The Mexicans would still have it. In fact, we wouldn't be in North America at all, or anywhere else for that matter. Kids who grew up in baggy shorts and backward baseball caps never would have stopped the Huns from taking over Europe in the 5th century, never would have been able to keep the Moors south of the Pyrenees in the 8th century. White men who believed that Huns and Moors and Turks and Mongols had as much right to Europe as whites did, and that we ought to be fair to these other races and share things with them, simply wouldn't have survived. They wouldn't have deserved to survive. We are here today because our ancestors weren't feminized, Judaized wimps. And if our descendants are to rule this planet a century from now, a lot of people's ideas and attitudes need to be straightened out in a hurry. The feminized wimps need to be removed from our government, from our media, from our educational institutions, and replaced by real white men. That'll be a tough job, because real white men are a lot scarcer than they used to be. But the job must be done. Otherwise, our race is finished forever. I don't really care how the job is done, whether the wimps all get machine gunned and bulldozed into giant lime pits, or whether their thinking eventually is straightened out by a program of prolonged trauma and privation. But I think that a really good fight between blacks and whites over reparations for slavery can't hurt. I think that having Hillary in the U.S. Senate, where the few decent white citizens left in New York can see and hear her every day and have their faces rubbed in her programs for the next 6 years, can't hurt. I think that having a presidential election turn out in a way that leads half of the electorate to believe that the election was stolen from them can't hurt. Well, I'll continue to talk with you about black reparations and other things, and the National Alliance will continue to grow stronger, and its members will continue to do whatever is necessary to lay the groundwork for the survival of our people. And you can support these efforts and stay in closer touch with what's happening if you'll write to me today and pledge your regular help. Thanks for being with me again today.